Plenty of people look like they are coping on the outside, while inside their mind and body are quietly telling them that they're running out of steam and stress has become the background noise of daily life, which makes it harder to tell what is normal and what isn't. When life feels like that, even small moments of discomfort can set off alarm bells and your brain can react as if something dangerous is happening. You know, something could be uncomfortable or there's uncertainty or it's unfamiliar, and it doesn't mean it's unsafe. And then there's the moment when someone starts wondering if they should reach out for help. People often second guess it, wait it out, or tell themselves that they should cope on their own.
The moment you think, I wonder if I need some extra help, or that thought's popped into your mind that you feel like you might not be coping and you're having sort of thoughts like, this is too much, I'm struggling, I don't know how I'm going to keep going. Of course, they would all be really good reasons to connect.
These two ideas sit at the center of this conversation. We avoid feelings that are uncomfortable because our brain labels them as unsafe. And we delay support because we think we should be able to handle everything on our own, or we don't even know what support could look like or where to go or if we need it. These patterns can keep people stuck. To dig into this, I am joined again by return guest, Dr. Jodie Richardson. Jodie is the host of the Well Hello Anxiety podcast. She's a well-being and mental health expert, author and speaker, and she brings a mix of lived experience and grounded science that helps people understand what's happening in their body rather than feel confused or overwhelmed. We talk about why life feels heavy right now, how to tell the difference between everyday stress and an anxiety condition, and why emotional fitness is built the same way as physical fitness is, with small steps, repeated often, even when they feel uncomfortable. We also explore how anxiety shows up in relationships, especially when one person tries to fix things and the other person just wants to feel understood. Welcome to This Complex Life. Let's take a look at the messy and complex relationship between stress, anxiety, and the stories that our brains tell us. Hello and welcome to This Complex Life. Joining me today, I have Dr. Jodie Richardson. Hello, Jodie.
Hello. Good to be back with you.
So we've had a number of chats between our two podcasts, me popping up on Well Hello Anxiety and Jodie being a frequent guest on This Complex Life. And today we want to talk about stress and anxiety and why maybe things just feel so hard right now.
Yeah.
We talk a lot between the two podcasts around stress and fatigue and anxiety, and I think one of the things I'm curious to hear your insights on is, how do you help people understand the difference between maybe stress and overwhelm and anxiety as a feeling versus an anxiety mental health concern, mental illness diagnosis?
Yeah, it's really good because, and I think the language around it can sometimes be, you know, the language that we use is really important. And I think sometimes people say, you know, I'm feeling really anxious, whereas they're just having a normal stress response to a, you know, for a very good reason. And so I love that you've asked this question. So the way that I like to explain it, look, you know, essentially we feel stressed when we, the demands that are on us, we don't feel like we have the resources to meet the demands that life is placing on us. And that's really true for a lot of people a lot of the time, because life does ask a lot of us, doesn't it? We were just chatting, weren't we, about, you know, coming through injuries and things, and just there are a lot of moving parts day to day. And so if we think about what are the resources that we've got to meet the challenges that we're facing, and so they can be internal resources. They can be kind of drawing on whether or not we need persistence or we need to carve out more time, set more boundaries, you know, in terms of like the things that we have control over. And sometimes it can be about reaching out and getting some more help, maybe asking for more help so that we can sort of draw on the people around us. So stress is something that we're really equipped to cope with. We are biologically very well equipped to cope with it when it's acute, which means it sort of rises in response to something that's happening. Like, for example, I've got a teenager today sitting an exam. A lot of the teenagers will feel really stressed, possibly anxious, which I can talk about in a second, because they might feel like there's so much to do, there's so much to learn, I don't have enough time, I'm not understanding. And so stress response is a normal response that rises and falls depending on what's happening. A good example I used, I don't know if I've shared this with you before, but maybe listeners heard it previously, but I remember as a kid, Marie, my brother and I, showing my age here, we got like 50 cents or so to ride to the milk bar. Have I shared this with you?
I don't think so, no.
Oh, okay. We used to get pocket change to ride to the milk bar and ride our bikes to the milk bar around, you know, just a few blocks away as kids. And we'd cut through a vacant block of land. And on one day we got swooped by magpies, a classic Australian thing to happen. And, you know, it was very stressful in the moment, like, you know, frightening as well. So you're reacting to what's happening and in the moment. But then the next week when I'm thinking I'm riding to the milk bar again on Friday, I'm anticipating what might go wrong. I might get swooped again. Then the anxiety can build. And the interesting thing about anxiety is it could be, you know, if it's a normal everyday anxiety, again, it's about something that is happening. It could be that you've got to interview somebody for a job or fire someone, or you've got to very difficult conversation to have with someone and you're worried about the outcome and what might happen. There's uncertainty. And anxiety disorder being something that anxiety that's frequent and it's getting in the way of daily life. It's extreme. And I sit at that end. I'm actually medicated for my anxiety. Listeners may know that or may not, but I cope really well with it because of all that I do to look after myself. But yeah, and anxiety activates the stress response. So it's the same response, but it's just activated for a different reason. So I hope that that kind of gives listeners a bit more insight into kind of the differences and hopefully helps them figure out a little bit more where they might be sitting themselves as well.
So how do people know when it's time to get support? When I'm talking to people, they've already reached out to me. So they're in therapy and they've already accessed that support. They've either gone to their GP or they've looked at paying privately or whichever way they've come.
Yeah.
When you're running workshops and people are maybe having a conversation about anxiety, what do you share with them as maybe ideas or things to consider that is time to get a little support that's maybe beyond DIY or they could benefit from some, you know, mental health or professional support of some kind?
Yeah. Often the time to get it is the moment you think, I wonder if I need some extra help. You know, if you're wondering about that or that thought's popped into your mind that you feel like you might not be coping and you're having sort of thoughts like, this is too much, I'm struggling, I don't know how I'm going to keep going. Of course, they would all be really good reasons to connect. But if we sort of step back a little bit and take a sort of a bigger picture view of, you know, particularly anxiety, have a look at how it's interfering with you kind of getting through each day. We know that well-being is feeling good and functioning well, but we also know that it is not normal to feel good all the time. And sometimes you might feel really anxious for a really good reason. You know, there might be a big event coming up, or there might be a significant life change that's occurring and there's uncertainty, unknowns, you're worried, but you also can probably kind of see that once this kind of problem is past or the challenge has been passed, that things might settle down. And even under those circumstances, even when you know it's temporary, it's brilliant to get extra help if you, you know, feel like you could do with some extra support and tools. But in a nutshell, what I do say to people is, if you're not sure if you need help, absolutely go and have a chat with your GP. That's a really good place to start and just sort of talk through what's happening. But if the anxiety is hanging around and it's really stopping you from doing a lot of things or things that you would normally enjoy or want to do, then that's another good reason. So if it's frequent, extreme, and getting in the way of daily life is a good way to sort of think about it.
I love that. And that's what I teach in mental health first aid and other workshops is, you know, gets in the way of day-to-day functioning, lasts longer than it should. And it's having that impact where it's affecting sleep and maybe your eating habits and your ability to do the things you want to do. One of the sayings that one of the concepts I talk to people about, I'd be curious to hear your thoughts, is, you know, something could be uncomfortable or there's uncertainty or it's unfamiliar and it doesn't mean it's unsafe. And I see people struggle with an aversion to difficult emotions or to unpleasant emotions, and they then stop that particular thing. So they want to avoid the unpleasant feelings because maybe a part of their body or their brain is telling them it's unsafe, it's dangerous.
Yeah.
Is that something that you've encountered in your work?
Very much so. And, you know, we like to feel good. We love that. We don't like to feel, you know, uncomfortable and distressing emotions. And, you know, I think a lot of it's kind of in how we're raised and what is kind of, you know, how much space and time and support we're given to just feel what comes up for us. And so I think if we can look at the scenario and what it is, for example, like somebody might be in a profession or in a professional role that they don't feel they're not enjoying, it's not fulfilling, it doesn't feel like it's, you know, the right fit anymore, but the discomfort of starting to look somewhere else or start over somewhere else can keep you stuck in something that's not really, you know, meeting your needs and helping you live a sort of a meaningful life. And so I think if we can think about being like what's important to us and what sort of is underneath the choices that we're making, and knowing that sometimes like something new, something unfamiliar is going to feel a little unsafe and different extents for different people, but there's so much to be gained if you can find ways to move through and still make those choices. Like, for example, I started my podcast and I was so filled with anxiety. The irony is just so, you know, like amusing, but I was just so overwhelmed with anxiety and everything in my head said, don't do it. Don't do it. It's too risky. Like, this isn't safe. You're putting your thoughts and ideas and conversations out in the world for people to listen to and judge maybe. But deep down, I knew it was COVID and people were struggling and I wanted to help. And I was driven by that is what fueled me to be willing to tolerate that in view of kind of moving towards something that was really important. So I think when we can get our head around, well, how important is this? What's to be gained? And maybe how can I break it down so that I can tolerate maybe a little bit of discomfort or increasing discomfort over time rather than maybe jumping in the deep end? But yeah, I think it's very easy to distract ourselves from really difficult feelings. It's very easy to pick up the phone and scroll. We don't really have to be bored and sit with it and notice it. And, you know, we certainly don't have to like it, but it's a much healthier choice. If we can just notice a name and just learn to just say to ourselves, you know, this is how I'm feeling at the moment and that's okay. And we do know, don't we, that when we can do that, it usually moves on. As opposed to when we fight it, it's like pushing that beach ball under the water. Eventually it's going to come out, maybe in a way that's uncontrolled or in a way that we don't like. So yeah, but certainly something I hear people talk about a lot, that's for sure.
Yeah, I think that's a really beautiful example to share your own vulnerability in the podcast. I was definitely the same and I made so many mistakes and
yeah, same. Please don't listen to those first few episodes.
I wrote in one of my newsletters recently around trying to compare the feeling of moving through the anxiety to regaining fitness post an injury. And I was thinking about it because after I had a knee surgery and my running was zero. Like, I tried to go for a run. I did like 500 meters. I was like, oh my goodness, what the? And I was thinking about a couple that I was working with where the pattern of avoiding difficult conversations relieved the anxiety in the moment, but then created a more difficult conversation next time. And I was kind of reading about this idea of like emotional fitness and sort of tolerating difficulty, and that it might not have always been anxiety, but I think it was still in that fear base. And I was thinking, well, it sort of feels like trying to get back into running. And part of my brain was like, no, it's unsafe. It'll hurt because of my knee. And it did hurt and I had an injury. And then the other part was, no, I've done the physio, I've done the rehab. It will hurt, but it's not unsafe or it's not doing damage unless I go too far. And so just trying to think, if I did two runs a week, that's 100 a year. If I did three, even if they were small, that's 150-ish. And so trying to think of this idea of, some of it is exposure. I can't just not have ever run before or not run. I haven't run, I think my 10Ks was during lockdown. I haven't run that distance before. I just kind of did a few kilometers just to kind of decompress. I can't start with that my body won't cope. And so I think some people might find that a helpful metaphor of it's a fitness that you build up. And even if you only do it 10 minutes, three times a week, that's, you know, 150 occasions in which you've pushed yourself out. So whether it is the podcasting, whether it is a difficult conversation with a friend or partner, you can only get it done by doing. Like, you can't outlearn that. You can't, I mean, reading might provide you some of that education, but you have to, like, you have to put your runners on and go for a run. You can't just watch videos about running and listen to podcasts about running and look at all the reviews for the best runners and then spend hours comparing the Garmin with the Apple Watch, with the Nora, with the, you've got to put your runners on.
You've got to do it. You've got to hit the pavement, so to speak. Yeah. Can I share something else with you, Marie, that's just come to mind?
Yeah, of course.
So you obviously know, you know, that, you know, I can look back and see anxiety from PrEP, but I didn't get diagnosed until I took myself to the GP and was diagnosed with depression in my mid-20s. And I started seeing a therapist, third time lucky, with my psychologist. And I'll never forget, I was in the kitchen. This is pre-having kids. I'd taken a little bit of time off work and I was just so sad. I was just so down. And I put in a phone call to get a call back. Like, obviously, you know, I couldn't call direct, of course, but, you know, for those times when you're really struggling, you can request a call back and it could be 5 hours before you get a call back. It could be the next day. You just don't know. But I wasn't coping and I was doing what I'd seen my mum do, which was just clean. I was just cleaning. I was just wiping and vacuuming and just our house was pristine because she lived with anxiety and that was just how she kind of managed. And he said to me, and I was literally, you know, curled up in a ball, leaning up against the, you know, knees to chest, leaning up against the island bench in the kitchen. And he just said to me, what if you just sit there and feel it? What if you just sit there and feel how you feel, but tell me what you'll do when you feel better? And I did. And I said, I'll play with the dogs and go outside maybe and throw the ball for them or something. And that was in my mid-20s. Honestly, that was the first time I'd sat with a feeling, because it feels so dangerous. Like you say, it's not that my life with it was at risk, but my brain had all my life just said, it's just not safe to feel what comes up. You've just got to distract yourself and work hard and achieve and, you know, just do everything but pay attention to how you're feeling and let it be. And I did that. It was such a turning point because it taught me, by just through that experience of just sitting there and just letting my tears out, having a jolly good cry. Eventually the waterworks stopped. One of my dogs was right beside me and I finished the phone call, sat there and cried for a while and just let myself feel sad. And then all of a sudden I sort of thought, oh no, what did I say I do? I'm starting to feel like, oh, I think I could probably get up and go outside now and throw the ball for the dogs. And it was just this monumental moment of, oh, actually I survived that. It's okay. And in fact, I've moved on from it even. It was so powerful, but it feels so hard. It feels so hard, doesn't it? And I did need his support, but eventually I learned to do it for myself.
Yeah, I love that, sitting with it. And one of the questions I wanted to, I guess, get your feedback on is, what are some of the things that people maybe do either by habit or instinct that actually can make it worse?
Oh, gosh. It's, you know, and what you said before is so true, in that when you were referring to the couple with the difficult conversation, is that, you know, it's what Dr. Russ Harris calls the happiness trap, is that in the moment we might get that short-term relief, but in the long term we can end up with the problem that we started with, the challenge, and more challenges. And an example would be if you turned to maybe food or sugar or alcohol to kind of cope, so that you can distract yourself and numb yourself from the feeling. But then, of course, then you've still got whatever's happening in terms of your emotional health, but now you're leaning a lot more on something that is really not healthy for you and can cause other problems with relationships and with your physical health and with work and sleep. And so I think if we can, you know, the first step is sort of that awareness. That first step is kind of, what are the patterns? And all my life, it was chocolate. That was just what I would do. And I didn't feel good, I would just go and buy a chocolate bar. And we can probably all kind of pinpoint what's our thing. But now when I might have that urge to go and eat something sugary, I can kind of say to myself, I can just have that enough awareness to be able to say, that's not actually going to solve this for me. Because, you know, I used to eat a whole block of Cadbury chocolate and then I would just feel sick. and upset. And so, yeah, I think the things that can get in the way are those behaviors and those choices that are distracting or numbing. Or another big challenge is avoidance. It's not doing the things that are really important and that might, you know, will bring you joy and connection and, you know, new experiences. And when we do avoid doing the things that might make us a bit uncomfortable, unfortunately, it can make our world really small. And often for people with anxiety who might choose not to go to a function, connect with other people, or put their hand up for a promotion, you know, in the end, it really can rob you of opportunities. And so I'm really pleased that we can talk about this, because there's lots of things that people will do, but it feels like the harder path, but it actually ultimately is the easier road to just go, I am just feeling really sad right now. And it's just going to be a morning where I'm feeling sad. I'll say that to myself sometimes, or I'll say, I'm feeling flat, or I'm feeling frustrated, or I'm feeling anxious, or I'm feeling worried. You know, we can manage differently, but I will just say to myself, I'll notice how I'm feeling. I'll name it. I'll just say, I'm just going to feel like this for a while. And then I usually get into work, sit at my desk and do some work. And an hour later, I'm ready to go and make a coffee. And I almost check in with myself and realize, oh, I've kind of moved through that. I've kind of moved through it. And if I haven't, I'll just relabel it, knowing that it's really normal to have all sorts of emotions. And I think if we can really let people know that it's just not normal to be happy all the time, despite what you see around you, it's not. It's normal to feel all sorts of feelings, and giving ourselves permission to feel whatever comes up for us. It's such a kindness to ourselves, but it's not easy to do. Not for everyone.
No, it's not easy. And as you were talking about the habit of using chocolate to cope, one of the observations I've had recently with some of the conversations I've had, not just in my therapy room, but out and about, is some people, I suspect, resist doing the things for themselves that they know will be helpful, because they're kind of still wanting that external stressor or that other person to change. So, for example, they might have a crappy job and they somehow want the boss to change or the conditions to change. And they keep eating, let's say, the block of chocolate, which then spikes your sugar, impacts your mood, the emulsifiers might upset your stomach. You might end up with other gastrointestinal things. You're not having your stable diet. It might then impact your sleep because you're like, well, I've had such a crappy day, I'm going to just binge watch TV. And in a way, it's sabotaging it, but they also don't want to change because then it feels like the other person won.
Yeah.
And I've noticed this a little bit with some particular topics. I'm not sure how to, I haven't quite maybe formulated it in my head, but I think some people don't want to look inward at what can I control, what's within my grasp, what do I need to do differently, or yes, it's unfair, it shouldn't happen, and it is what's happening, what can I do different? Do you see some of that play out in the conversations you have around anxiety or in any of the research that you've put together for your books?
Oh, goodness, yes. And it just brings me straight to acceptance. And there's this messy kind of place where we can kind of, you know, we're sitting in this messy kind of cloud in between kind of, you know, what's happened and acceptance. And you know, it's good to notice and name and recognize what's happening, and there are things that we can do for ourselves to improve how we feel. But when we get to a point of acceptance, it's just like it can be such a relief, because you're just kind of ending that struggle with what it is that's happening and ending that wait for other people to change. And we can only make decisions about what we do. And acceptance, like you say, can feel for people like they've won, like somehow I'm giving up. But I think it's really good to understand that acceptance doesn't mean that, in the same way that forgiveness doesn't mean that you're okay with how somebody's treated you. It's about, how is this struggle affecting me? And so here at home, you know, one of the things that we will say is, it is what it is. And I've got the Daily Stoic. I don't know if you've read any Stoic philosophy, I read the Daily Stoic at the moment. So I've obviously haven't had it for a full year because it's literally one every day and it's dated. And, you know, a lot of the Stoic philosophy, and it's not about being Stoic as in unemotional and unfeeling and holding strong. Stoic philosophy is about focus on what you, there's so much to it, but, you know, it's time wasted when we spend time thinking about what other people could or should, or, you know, we wish that they would have done differently. And what's done is done. All we can focus on is how we can move forward. And that acceptance is, it's so powerful because it stops you holding on, wishing and hoping that things were different, and enables you then to sort of take a bit more charge and a bit more control about how you're going to move forward. So, but it is, it's so painful. I've been there as well. Like I've had, you know, incidents in my life where I felt really wronged, and I've got to a point of acceptance, and then I've got later to a point of forgiveness, because I read a Stoic passage the other day which was about being unforgiving is like holding onto a hot coal and expecting the other person's hand to burn, or expecting the other person to hurt because of it. And it's, that's the truth of it. It's what affects us, not them. They're not thinking about us. So hard things to do, easier to do when they've got someone like you to support them through kind of thinking these things through and answering those questions about, well, hang on, but what they did isn't okay, you know, and getting sort of being able to move through that and past it as well.
Yeah, I love that book. I recommend it as well to people. So if you haven't heard of it, get the book, The Daily Stoic. It is fantastic, and it's just one page each day. They're dated, and you just digest that little piece of wisdom from philosophers. And that's not always the Stoic. Oh, is it always the Stoic? Then yeah, it's really good book. But yeah, I like that saying of, I think it's picking up hot coal, or the other one is drinking poison and expecting the other to die.
Ah, yes.
And I think that's a really powerful thing. And I see it a lot, but you know, we talk a lot about when we cross over on our podcast about the relational aspect of this. And sometimes it can be really hard to accept the role we're playing in something, and how that can sometimes push away the very thing we want, or be hindering the very progress that we want. And maybe sort of to bring it round to, how can someone help a person that they love or care about who's anxious, without maybe going into fix it mode or reassurance mode, which so many people think is really helpful. And as we keep talking about, whenever we have episodes talking about sort of relationships, we kind of don't say that's the case.
It's so true, and yet it can be a bit of a default, can't it? And because, you know, I think about, first of all, like a parenting relationship, is that when our kids are hurting or anxious about something, let's use anxious about, very excited about being in the school play, but then terrified of being in the school play. And, you know, with love in their heart and well-meaning intentions, a parent could say, you'll be fine. This is what you wanted to do. Don't worry about it. You're going to be okay. And unfortunately, that can help. That can help a lot. I got a lot of that when I was a kid, and that helped. Like when my mum would say, you're going to be okay, it's all going to work out. That was all I needed, but I wasn't able to manage anything on my own, not for a long time anyway. And so it can be very well-meaning to offer reassurance, and sometimes it can start off with just on one or two occasions, that then it can sort of really start to snowball and become really the go-to way that a young person copes with any anxiety that they're feeling, is to just kind of get that reassurance, which is an avoidance strategy really at its heart. It's the anxiety showing up. I'm not able to handle it. I don't have the skills. I don't have the tools, which everyone can learn over time. So you're kind of looking outside of yourself for support, and someone says it's going to be okay, the feeling does go away for a while. So helping other people with their anxiety, I think, you know, going to fix it mode is not what really anybody wants unless they ask for it, is how I like to think about it. And Marie, you might have more to say on that. But when we've got a problem and we share it with someone, we really want to be heard. We want to be listened to. And it's really nice when other people can say, hey, that sucks, or I understand why you're feeling that way, or I'd feel that way too. Or even if, look, I've never been in your shoes, but it sounds like that's like really awful. That kind of validation is really, it's really brings us closer. Do you feel really more connected, and strengthens relationships? But, you know, when somebody dives into fix it mode, you can feel really like you can just feel really unseen and disappointed or let down by a conversation. So what does help for anxiety is, I think, first of all, learning a bit about it, like understanding it, because some people don't just, like, when anxiety is debilitating, especially, you know, like for me, I look at my, gosh, 47 years since I've been a four-year-old kid with breathing troubles and an upset tummy saying, I don't want to go to school, you know, and I think of Peter, my partner, and what he's learned. So he learned a lot about what anxiety is like, what it feels like, why it happens. And that's a first step, because we don't feel and act the way we do because we want to. It's just the way our brain and body are responding to something that doesn't feel safe. So understanding is really good. I think too, also asking us, those of us that you know that are anxious, if you spend a lot of time with us, ask us what helps and what would be, you know, what would be helpful if anxiety shows up. And so that could mean, you know, you can share with your partner, hey, what I actually find is sometimes I just need to get 5 minutes alone, like maybe away from the kids, or maybe just step outside in the sunshine, or just some time out. Or it could be that I need to go and put my face in a bowl of cold water if I'm feeling really anxious. Because when we are very anxious, often we can't think of what we need in that moment. We can get so overwhelmed with anxiety that there's a part of our brain that we can't access that helps us make good decisions about what to do next. I think some compassion is really helpful, because sometimes we are a bit irrational when we're really anxious about something. We can be, you know, irrational about, gosh, classic for me was early days was, I've left the hair straightener on, or I've left the iron on, when I know that I've always turned it off at the power and unplugged it, but my anxiety would start to build, you know, have I turned it off? Have I unplugged it? And so having a little bit of compassion, because it can be a bit frustrating sometimes when somebody's anxious and maybe they're behaving in a way that's not, doesn't make sense to you. And I think just lots of love, and also, you know, asking and letting the person know that if they wanted to get some more help, that you're going to support them and be there alongside them if they need a little extra. But I think it's particularly hard in a relationship when one person is really anxious and the other person just doesn't have a good understanding of it, and it just makes no sense. And the person with anxiety can feel a bit dismissed, because it's all the classic kind of, you know, but it's all in your head. It's very much in your head. It's very much in your body. It's very much a whole body, mind and body response, and it can be terrifying. So yeah, they're just a few ideas, but I'm interested to hear what you would add to that.
I agree. And I think that's one of the hardest things, is it comes down to that acceptance as well. And when people are saying, oh, don't worry about it, they think they're moving you through it, but it is dismissing it, and it doesn't make the situation go away. When it comes to relationships, I see that it actually means that person goes to you less.
Mm.
And so children start to learn that pretty quickly, that this is not something I can go to my parents about. I'm just using parents as an example. Or a partner might just slowly start or not share as much about their day if their partner's response was unhelpful, because they're also avoiding the unpleasant feeling of not being heard or understood, but they also might not be able to do anything about helping their partner understand that. And so it slowly erodes that connection over time. It's not immediate, but slowly, slowly someone's left with a feeling of, my person, partner, doesn't know what's happening in my life. They're not aware of my current stresses. You know, if something bad happens, I might hesitate to call them because I'm not going to get the response that I want. And they can start to feel lonely. And so they'll come to me in therapy and say, we feel lonely, or we're having trouble communicating. And each person's like, I don't know what you mean. It's so obvious. And it's those little misattunements and offering solutions or trying to fix it and not validating and empathizing. And I say that to some people and they're like, yes, absolutely. And some other people are like, I don't know what those words mean.
Yeah.
And they struggle because they think it means endorsing or accepting a particular thought or belief. So if I was to say, I'm so nervous about a podcast episode, and my partner was like, I wouldn't be nervous, or, you know, something like, that's not helpful. Or if he might think, if I said, it makes sense that you're nervous, that he agrees that I should be nervous. And so we can go around in circle, but even saying, tell me more, or what's that like, or what do you imagine is going to happen? you can get to problem solving. You can say, what have you done before? Do you want me to role play it with you? Is there anything you need help with the tech setup? Like, there are things that you can do. But if that empathy isn't there to begin with, if you can't validate that I see for you, you're having a hard time, the rest won't land. It's not the same as if my car breaks down and I call someone. I don't want them to ask me how I'm feeling about my car broken down. Come and pick me up.
Fix my car.
So for functional things like that, for work, for building a bridge or making a spreadsheet, there are things that, yes, you fix it, you problem solve it, you get in there, you get it done. When it comes to emotions and relationships, that same skill that's an asset in so many other areas can really fracture a relationship. And it might not happen straight away. It's slowly that person can feel lonely and disconnected. And then you're really missing out on actually being able to support them with what they need or how they want to be seen in the world.
It's so true. You know, it's funny at the time, but there was a little experience that I had here at home yesterday. Was I wanted to make a potato bake. You know how thinly you have to slice the potatoes? Have you made a potato bake where you've done that?
We have one, a Greek one called a budeki, and it's potato, zucchini, and then feta cheese, and it's all layered.
Oh, yum, yum. So I found in the top of my kitchen cupboard an electric mandolin slicer, and I'm like, what a ripper. I'm not going to have to thinly slice a kilo of potatoes. Anyway, I was working out how to set it up, and Pete was on his way out to cricket, and I found the slicer and I set it up. But as I started slicing the potatoes with it, they were too thick. And I, like, these things take forever to cook, and I just knew straight away it's too thick. And he could see that I had a big job ahead of me, and he's like, it's fine, it's good, that's great. And I'm like, no, it's not, they're too thick. He's like, no, they're good. He's trying to tell me they're good. And I'm trying to tell him they're not. And anyway, he was just so adamant that it was going to be okay, because, and we got to the bottom of it later, and I just got so frustrated, because I'm just like, you don't know what you're talking about. Have you ever made one of these things? Like, they take forever to cook. Anyway, so it was a real disconnect, and he goes, no, that's okay. Do what you need to do, whatever you need to do, because he saw me starting to cut them with the knife and just moving on. And anyway, when he got home, anyway, I found another thing I could put in to make it thinner, and I managed to use it, and it was all good in the end. But I said to him when he got home, I said, what was that about? Because you were just so damn sure that those potatoes were going to be okay. And I said, was it that you were worried about me having to do more work? He said, yeah. He said, I was just trying to insist that you used the contraption to make your life a little bit easier. And I'm like, I thought that's what it was. And I said, but for me, I just thought you're not listening to me, because it took nearly 2 hours for this thing to cook and they were paper thin. And so, yeah, so it's just a funny little example, but in the moment, I was so frustrated that he wasn't listening. But when we talked about it later, it was from a place of he just wanted me to have 2 minutes of slicing potatoes with a machine than 15 minutes, that was where it was coming from. But that example just popped to mind when you said about how it moves you further apart than closer together when you're not being listened to.
And then you could have been fighting about that and then been shitty at that. And then the whole day goes blown up and, like, all I wanted was my baked potato.
Exactly. I just wanted a really nice, well-cooked potato bake. But, yeah, no, it's yeah. And, look, you're right. Like, when it comes to our emotions, just – and it's not easy for everyone. Like, it's very much straight to fixing it. A lot of people, that's a default. And you might not get it right all the time, and that's okay. But just have that awareness and have, like, what you talk about in with your couples is having that conversations to understand where each person is coming from. So sometimes it's okay, isn't it, just to say, well, what do you need? Like, what would help? Like, if you can accept the feedback that fix it mode isn't helping, and just sort of say, well, what would help? Then, that's a really great step forward too, isn't it? But not easy. Again, straightforward, but not easy.
Yeah. So we could talk about this forever, but I think there might be several moments like that in kitchens around Australia, around the world, coming into the holiday season. So, yeah, absolutely. Thanks so much for joining me on the podcast. We could talk about this forever. There's so many ways anxiety shows up in our personal life, in our relationships, and mean, how many seasons have you got and you're still learning new things and discussing it from different angles? So
yes,
thank you for joining me on This Complex Life.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening. To keep the conversation going, head on over to Instagram or LinkedIn and follow me. If you'd like to keep updated with episodes and other interesting things happening in mental health, join my weekly This Complex Life newsletter, where I'll share tools, tips, and insight. There's a link in the show notes. Got a question you want answered? Shoot me an email or a DM. I'd love to hear from you. And if you enjoy the show, I'd really appreciate it if you could leave a rating and a review. It helps other people find the podcast.